slideshow. Welcome, everybody. I'm Hank Roth, the Crime Prevention Coordinator for the City of Morro Bay, and I welcome you all to this evening's Neighborhood Watch informational meeting. This evening, we're going to be discussing scams, swindles, and elder abuse. We have a couple of guest speakers, Julie Gall, who's an investigator for the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, and our own Meredith Bates here. She's a manager at the Ombudsman Program, and they'll be coming up in just a minute. This is a continuation of our senior safety program that we did back in June, and we're going to talk a little bit about just kind of going into a little more detail on some of the various scams that we have here in Morro Bay and the various scams that are, you know, that are out there. Every senior and every person who works with or has a senior family member should be aware of these scams. These criminals and their crimes can cost our seniors their life savings, their self-respect, their confidence, and even their lives sometimes. Bunco is a swindle in which an unsuspecting person is cheated. Sometimes it's called scam, confidence game, like that. It's inherently designed to make you feel foolish about being taken advantage of. It plays on the victim's weaknesses, on the greed, gullibility, and their goodness. Usually seniors are reluctant to report these crimes for fear of embarrassment, loss of independence, and even reprisal from the criminals. And this reduces the chances that they'll report the crime to law enforcement. You know, and this is what the bad guys depend on, that you folks won't report this. Some folks lack the understanding and the recognition that what has happened to them is a crime. Why do they attack the elderly? Well, they're a growing target population group. They come from a time when people are more trusting. They have the money, know our laws, or they may not in their country trust law enforcement, or they may be illegals and are afraid of being deported. How do they find victims? Well, and I've talked to you guys about this before, obituaries. You know, what kind of information is in the obituary? The deceased spouse's name, the surviving spouse's name and their hometown, the names of the family members and the towns they live in, so the criminal can look in the obituary and find out that, you know, Mrs. Jones lives in Morro Bay all by herself, and, you know, her kids live in Bakersfield or Fresno or whatever, so they know that now that she's alone, she can be, they'll target her. You know, they'll use the obituary columns sting where the swindlers will, you know, call them up and you know, say that the surviving spouse, you know, owed $300 on such and such a bill or had ordered this article or this magazine or something like that and while this person is dealing with the grief of the loss of their spouse, you know, they got somebody trying to swindle money out of them. Approaches and techniques. The suspects, the criminals, will adapt and use many approach techniques. Some of the most common here in Morro Bay are the door-to-door scams, the telephone scams, our email scams. Everybody gets those emails. The public approach where, oh, I need your help. You know, we're out of money. We're stuck in town here, and, you know, we just need enough money to stay in the motel, you know. You need to watch for those kind of warning signs. You know, other warning signs are fraudulent offers. This is like when they're trying to sell you something. Is, you know, a promise that you can win, make, or borrow money easily. You know, you guys, there's no free lunch. A demand that you need to act immediately or else you'll miss out on a great opportunity. You know, if it's on sale today, it'll be on sale again next month. A refusal to send you any written information before you agree to buy or donate. You know, don't buy things or give a donation on an impulse. You need to sit and think about it, you know. If they attempt to scare you into buying something. If they insist that you wire the money or have a courier come pick it up, be careful of that, because sometimes a courier will pick up more than just the money. And if they refuse to stop calling you, you can pretty much depend on the fact that they're a scam artist. And this time, you know, gosh, what do you say about this? Every time, Susan, every time, you know, I get these emails, and you know, they you know, I won $300 million. All I need to do is send, you know, $30,000 or give them my credit card account or my you know, my checking account number. You guys, you know, they're scams, folks. If you haven't entered into a sweepstakes or a lottery, it's not. They're not just going to pick your name out random from, you know, some list of names on the internet. And there in the back, on the back table, or should be by most of you folks, are these little handouts, these little brochures from the California Lottery. And they have good information on lottery scams. You know, you received a lottery scam letter if you didn't buy a ticket. You know, if you do not live in the country where the lottery is, or you're not a citizen of that country, if you did not register your name, your street number, your address, or your phone number before you were allowed to buy the ticket online, if your mailbox or your email box isn't loaded with months' worth of promotions of this lottery, you know it's a scam. It's like Publishers Clearinghouse. We get that stuff in the mail all the time. You know, I mean, month after month after month, you know, before they have the final drawing. So if they're not publicizing this thing, it's a scam. I threw a in between those two pages there. There was just some if the letter contains one or more of the following claims, you know it's a scam. That was on page right after page 8. And it said, you know, if the letter or the email says all participants were selected through a computer ballot system drawn on 3,000 names from blah, 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 it's a scam. If the letter mentions any kind of claim agent, you know it's a scam. If the letter says due to a mix-up of some numbers and names that we ask you to keep this strictly secret, you know it's a scam. If it says any breach of confidentiality on the part of the winner will result in disqualification, ladies and gentlemen, it's a scam. You are seriously advised to keep all winning lottery information and numbers from the public. It is a scam. Due to a mix-up of some numbers and names, we ask that you keep this top secret. It's a scam. Special delivery scams. This is one where you get a call from, you know, somebody that says they're from UPS or FedEx or something like that, and they have a large or a well-insured delivery, you know, and it looks like it's valuable, you know, and we need to send a second delivery carrier to deliver this to you, and there'll be a small fee for that delivery carrier. All we need is your credit card number. You know, you guys, don't fall for the scam. I say it time and time again, check things out first, you know. Call me. Call, you know, a trusted friend. Call the ombudsman program. Call somebody that you trust and check these things out. Don't let these dirty bums take your money from you. The credit card security scam. And this is, we don't get so much of this anymore here in Morro Bay, but it's where the guy would or the woman would call, and they claim to be from a credit card security company, and they're going to check your credit card, you know, and make sure that it's that there's no fraud on it. You know, all they need is your credit card number. So tell them you'll call, you know, tell them thank you, you'll call the credit card company back. Charitable donations. We have a lot of that here in Morro Bay. And I've said it time and time again, you guys, if you want to give, give locally. You know, there's plenty of good local organizations here to donate your money to. The Friends of the Library, Neighborhood Watch, the Meredith, what's the one for the Reckon Parks? The Reckon Parks Foundation. Okay. You know, I mean, the Peace Officers Association, the Firefighters Association. We have plenty of local charities, you know, the service organizations, the churches. Give your money here in Morro Bay. Keep your money here in Morro Bay. If you do want to give to a charity, you can always check them out on the Better Business Bureau's Wise Giving Alliance. And that the website for that is www.give.org. Or you can call our local Better Business Bureau and down in Santa Barbara. And I believe that number is in your packets. It's 800-493-8817. And they can check out businesses and charities for you. Keep charity at home. Charity starts at home. Mail fraud, mail theft. This is the best way, the easiest way that the scam artists try to get your... one time that this happened in Morro Bay, but this is the distraction or imposter burglary. And usually there's a variety of approaches, but usually somebody will come to you'll be outside working in the yard or something, and somebody will come up to you, and you know, either they, you know, they pretend they're from PG&E or, you know, the gas company, or, you know, or they just, you know, want to show you that there's, you know, frayed wires on the side of your house, or you know, something to get you away from the front door. In the meantime, their partners are sneaking in the front door, going through your jewelry, stealing what they can. And if you catch them, then they're, oh, we're looking for our lost puppy, you know, puppy Fifi, you know. So watch for that. And you know what? If somebody tries to get you out of your house, just tell them just a minute, you know, and go back inside and call us, you know. If you get one of those door-to-door salespeople and they make you feel uncomfortable, just call us, you know, call the police department. You know, we're there to you know, we're not busy, that busy where we can't send somebody out there to check on you. And if somebody says they're with the electrical company or the gas company or something like that, you know, they have identification and you can call their number. That's also in your packet. It's usually difficult to get through, but you know, bottom line, if you feel uncomfortable, call us. We'll be there. The home repair scam. This we've had happen a couple of times that I'm aware of here in Morro Bay. Again, people are learning to be wary of this. And that's where the folks come up to you and, oh, we were painting a house around the corner and we've got some paint left over and we noticed that your fence needs some painting and, you know, for X amount of dollars, we'll paint that fence for you. And, you know, usually if the materials aren't substandard, you know, sometimes they'll... you know, they'll quote you one price, and then, you know, when you pay them, then they, oh, well, yeah, but you still need to pay Fred over here and Bill, you know, my two helpers, and they'll pressure you to give more money. If you've, you know, same thing, if you feel uncomfortable, just a minute, I have to go inside and get some more money, call the police, have them come out there, talk to these guys. The pigeon drop. This happened down in South County not too long ago. There's various schemes like this. I'll just kind of read what I downloaded from the internet. Pigeon it. The thing that is found can be anything, or you know, of real or perceived value. Could be a bag of cash, you know, with some betting slips in it, or a diamond bracelet, or you know, earrings or something. But whatever it is, it's just bait to get you interested. In some cases, the pigeon drop doesn't involve finding something of value. For instance, it may be an approach by someone with an accent who says they're leaving the country and has a sizable amount of money they can't take with them. And he asks you to deposit it in your account so that he can retrieve it later. But first, you need to prove that you can withdraw a large sum of money from your account. At times, the stranger says that he just inherited large sums of money and needs help making a donation. The details of what needs to be done can come in many forms, but it's always going to involve you having to put up some good faith money. There are many reasons that they give for needing the good faith money. It may be to prove that you have enough money to live on until you can claim the prize or the valuable item, or that the lawyer needs the money in order to process the paperwork, or that they need the money so that, you know, that you can prove that you're trustworthy. As strange as it seems, these things will make sense at the time when you're worried that you might lose out on a deal. No matter what the details are, the end result is always the same. You end up getting swindled out of your money. There's no free lunch, guys. Charity switch, same thing. Kind of like the pigeon drop scam. Just, you know, people come up to you, they want you to, you know, donate to a charity of theirs, and they're going to put some money into. Don't trust them. The bank examiner scam. This is when you get a call from somebody claiming to be a bank official or detective checking on their on your bank balance. They're asking you if there's is there some money missing from your account. The caller, you know, suspects that someone inside your bank is stealing, and they ask you to help them investigate this by withdrawing a large sum of cash from your account. Of course, there's no risk to you, you know, and be sure that you don't alert anybody in the bank, you know, or our undercover officers will be outside the bank, you know, watching for you, you know, and then you know, you go outside of the bank and, you know, you they hand you the money and they say, oh, we'll put it back in for you, you know, and, well, you lost your money. So, and sometimes these guys will do a follow-up scam, and this is like with all the scams. This, like, if you've been scammed, you gotta understand these scam artists, Nigerian, the sweetheart swindle. This occasionally happens in Morro Bay. I know it doesn't happen to any older gentlemen here, but it has happened here in Morro Bay. They have losses up to about $750,000. That's nationwide, not here in Morro Bay. And only 10% of these swindles are reported. It's usually, you know, older gentlemen, meet a young lady, you know. She's, you know, might have small children. She, you know, is willing to trade, you know, a companionship, home-cooked meals, you know, for, you know, food, clothing, whatever. You know, she's, you know, kind of in dire straits right now. And you know, they'll target these older fellas, and sometimes they fall for it. And when the money disappears, so does she. Gentlemen, watch your pocketbooks. The psychic and fortune teller frauds, they've had losses here. This is national. Anywhere between $30,000 and $60,000 losses are not unusual. These usually appeal to emotional needs of people, you know, a lost loved one, a lost pet or something. And they use a very strong religious flavor to this. Or, you know, if the victim has been having some, you know, bad luck, it's the evil spirits or a hex has been cast on you. And all you need to do is bring some cash or jewelry or money to the psychic. And they will cleanse, you know, you from those evil spirits and cleanse your money and your jewelry and that from you also. How can you protect yourself? You guys, you know, we've all been given that little voice inside, you know. Trust your instincts, you know. If it seems too good to be true, it probably is. If something makes you feel uncomfortable, go with that, you know. Don't be afraid to call the police. Don't be afraid to call your neighbor. That's what Neighborhood Watch is all about. You know, it's about neighbors looking out for each other. Verify that the caller, that the person calling you is, you know, by using an independent number. If somebody claims they're calling you from Bank of America, get their name and their phone number, and then look up the phone number for Bank of America and call them if they ask them if, you know, Mr. Jones, you know, from the fraud division is calling you. Never, never, never give out your personal information over the outside, clip to your mailbox, or I wouldn't even use your street mailbox. Again, as I said, I always put the stuff in the post office. It's a small town; it's not that far away. And retrieve your incoming mail promptly, or use a PO box. Shred all bills and documents. You know, even those pre-approved credit card applications, you know, I shred all of those things. Don't just tear them up. Anything that has any of your information on it, shred it. These people can buy your information online. $50, you can find out a person's social security number, driver's license, all that online. Lock your doors, even if you're just going to be outside for a little while. Check your credit report yearly. annualcreditreport.com. It's free. It's a free service here in California. You have three credit reporting bureaus. Those are in the pamphlets that I handed out. And check your credit. If you see any signs of, you know, weird activity, you know, just watch for that. Also, the Medical Information Reporting Bureau. It's also another free service. This is primarily for people that have individual health insurance plans, you know, that you're buying yourself. I checked mine out. It doesn't show anything on my report because I have health insurance with the city. But if you're paying for your own personal health insurance, the Medical Information Bureau will have that information. And it's good to know because, you know, people are also stealing, you know, there's identity theft of medical. They're using, people are using your identity for medical treatment, and that can cause a problem down the road, you know, especially if you're allergic to something and they're not.
Do they have Medicare access?
I don't think so, but I could find out for you. You know, if you'd like, my business card's back there. Give me a call and I'll check that out for you. I think it's just independent, but I didn't ask her. I didn't think to ask her about that, but I'll find out. Remember, you guys, your friends are not after your money or your credit. You know, we need to look out after each other and protect each other. We're a small town, you know, where there aren't very many, you know, there's not that many of us. There's only 10,000 of us out there, you know, so let's take care of each other, protect each other. Help yourself and your neighbors, you know. Keep your eyes open and ears open. You know, if you see any suspicious activity in your area, you know, call me. If you guys have any questions, concerns, need further information, if you'd like to have a neighborhood watch presentation in your community, you know, or in your neighborhood, give me a call. That's what I'm there for. Thank you very much. You guys, our next presentation will be our friend, Meredith Bates. Let me turn this off. Is that going off?
Thank you, Hank. And it's wonderful to be here. I'm very excited about talking to Morro Bay about elder abuse. Let's have some lights. There we go. Now I can see the audience here. Wonderful. And Hank asked me to come and talk. I'm a member of the board of directors of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. And Julie, who's sitting in the back of the room, works for the Ombudsman Program. So she's going to be talking after I'm finished. And the way we decided to divide up our tasks and how to inform you about elder abuse is I'm going to be talking about elder abuse in the home, people living in their home and how that happens and what that's all about. And Julie will be talking about the area that the long-term care ombudsman covers, which are long-term care facilities. I'm thinking I want to define elder abuse to you, but I think that's most people know what that is. Most people have an understanding of what it is. It can be perpetrated by total strangers, people that you don't know, and it is often perpetrated by family and friends and people that are close to us. About 80% of older adults want to stay living in their own homes. Most people after they're 50 don't move too often. They stay in the same place where they've been living once they turn 50. So you've got this large group of people, and we all know that our population is aging. So we have this group of people that want to stay at home into their golden years and not have to go to a facility. So they're vulnerable. And they're vulnerable to different kinds of abuse. There's abuse by other people, and there's also self-neglect, which is a type of abuse that's reportable. I work in the community with elders, And I'm a, what's called a mandated reporter. That means I must report even if I suspect abuse is going on. And it could be self-neglect, or it could be some kind of abuse like the kind that Hank was talking about, if I'm aware of that. So I'm required by law to contact Adult Protective Services and say, oh, I suspect that there might be some kind of abuse going on in this situation. There's other mandated reporters like doctors, nurses, other medical providers. Nowadays, clergy are mandated reporters, and recently people that work at banks are also mandated reporters. So that's a really good, because you never know what's going to go on at a bank, and it's good to have a set of eyes on potential abuse in that area. So I want to give you a couple of examples as I go along of places where I've had to make reports, where I, by law I've had to make a report to Adult Protective Services. There was a very nice lady in Los Osos. She was in her 80s. She lived in a very nice mobile home park by herself, and that's right where she wanted to stay. She didn't want to go to a facility. She had one son, and he lived at Santa Anita. And I was like, so he lives at Santa Anita? Isn't that a racetrack? Yes, but he, according to her, worked there and came to visit her from time to time. Now, she was very good about having her Social Security check automatically deposited in the bank, which I highly recommend. But her son was also, besides working at Santa Anita, he was a compulsive gambler. So when he would come and visit, he would borrow her ATM card. And he had her password. So these, every time he came to visit, sums of money were missing out of her account. So that's something I had to report to Adult Protective Services. Now, you would wonder, well, why did she give him her card in the first place? Why didn't she tell him, no, go get a job or get a life? And I think, like Hank was talking about, a lot of folks are alone, they're lonely. This was her only calls them from LA. Oh, yes, everything's fine. I'm just fine. I went to the doctor. Doctor says everything's fine. But it's very important to recognize when people are not able to take care of themselves. And some people think that a report to Adult Protective Services means that somebody's going to come whooshing in and throw you in the nursing home. That's not what happens. Adult Protective Services is a really great program of social workers that come out to the home, and they actually help the elderly person to do whatever it is they want to meet their goals. So there was a case that I was working with in Paso Robles. Another lovely lady, she was 89, she suffered from depression and a little bit of dementia. She had unfortunately alienated all of her neighbors. Some people, as they age and they're on their own, they seem to be warm and fuzzy and you just want to cuddle up with them. And this lady was not warm and fuzzy. She was very prickly. She hated her neighbors. She thought they were stealing from her. And so she didn't have any friends in her mobile home park where she was living. And she had one daughter who rarely visited. So as in working with this woman, I observed that she was forgetting to take her medication. And she needed that medication because she had depression and she had dementia. She was also forgetting to eat. Now, I should be so lucky that I would forget to eat. It would help me lose a couple of pounds. But she forgot. And she was also continued to drive, which was terrifying me as well as some of her neighbors. One time I came to visit her, and she was parked not by her home, but around the corner from her home, just sitting there in the car, and she didn't know where she was, and she didn't know how to get back to her home. So this is a case of self-neglect, where nobody was doing anything to this person, but she needed help. So you can call Adult Protective Services, and they will send a social worker out to try to help. And if you notice a neighbor is in need, in that kind of a way. How do you recognize self-neglect? Because it's not going to, you may not like these posters. I don't know if you can see them on the television. The person might not have a black eye, but they might be losing weight. They're going to activities, participating in the community, staying social so that one has friends, has people paying attention to who you are, what you're doing. Go to water aerobics like Dawn does. Another idea is having a buddy system. Now, I have a friend in Morro Bay, and she and I call each other every day. She's 76, but we're both single. And our big fear is, well, what if one of us falls down, hits our head, and nobody comes over for 3 or 4 days? So we have a buddy system where we call every day, even if it's just to say hi. It's a good idea to keep your own telephone for as long as possible. And they have these great phones now. I don't know if you've seen the phones that we've all been paying on our phone bills for people who have difficulty hearing or seeing. They have really big numbers on them, and you can turn the volume up. They cost nothing. I'll tell you how to get them before the end of my presentation. I like the idea of direct deposit. I love that electronic deposit in the bank so that if a check, your Social Security check comes, you don't have to worry, did you deposit it? Did someone pick it up? Did you accidentally throw it in the trash? It goes directly into your bank. And get good legal advice if you need it. We have a free legal service in this county, Senior Legal Services. And plus, we have some great attorneys that specialize in elder law. Okay, here are some things not to do. Those were things to do to help avoid elder abuse. Here's some things to do. Don't live with anybody who abuses drugs, alcohol, or has a history of violence. I'm on a committee for helping to regulate some caregivers in this community. And it's really difficult when you're trying to hire a caregiver and you don't know what their history is unless you go through an agency. And it's such a perfect job for someone directly out of prison because they're very persuasive and they can make up all kinds of things about their references and have all kinds of official-looking letters of reference. But they may be someone. If you do need personal care, caregiving, don't exchange that care for a transfer of property or a promise of future inheritance. There's a good way to work with caregivers by having a little contract and paying them appropriately so that there's not an. I've had caregivers before who become the best friend of the person they're taking care of with the expectation that when that person dies, they're going to get the ranch or the farm and not thinking about the cousins and the kids that are going to come out of the woodwork. A couple of tools that I want to talk about that I use that I think are important. This one, if you could put the camera on this for me, please. This is the Senior Information Guide. The Senior Center has these. This is the 2005 to 2007 version, and it's like a Bible to me. It has tons of information about resources, from food, shelter, legal, caregiving. It tells you how to hire a caregiver. It tells you all about adult protective services. It's easy to read, easy to find what resources you need. There's a new one coming out that'll be for the 2008 to 2009. I know that because I'm working, have been helping to work on that. But all the senior centers have them. The Ombudsman Office has some. They're just really a valuable tool. And another tool is this little box Has anyone in this room seen this? Yay, you have one. Okay, I have one. I haven't filled out all the every detail inside, but I do plan to. And on the back is a magnet. So this goes right on your refrigerator. And these little boxes that are called the Vial of Life are really handy. The first responders have been trained to look for these little boxes on people's refrigerator. And the paperwork inside will have your name, your address.
Or, you know, say, or even if you live alone, say if you can, you know, if your friend comes over and visits and you both pass out from, you know, whatever, you know, that you have a picture of that, who that information goes to.
Oh, that's true. I have heard that's a really good idea to put the photograph of the person. I work with two ladies that live together, and they didn't have a photo available, but one is very tall and one is very short, so they wrote on theirs the short one and the tall one. I said, I think that'll be okay. The other thing that's great information in the Vial of Life, it talks about the advance directive. Do you have one, and where is it? Who in this room has an advance directive? It's also sometimes called the Durable Power of Attorney for Healthcare. That's the document that you want to go with you to the hospital if you're in an emergency, because that tells who will make decisions for you if you're not able to make them for yourself about your health, whether you want to be kept alive at all costs on machines, at what point do you want machines not to be keeping you alive. It's what Terry Schiavo did not have. She didn't have something in writing. Yes.
Both my wife and I carry a copy of that slip of paper in our wallet. She has 8 different prescriptions she's on, plus her allergy to iodine. It's very handy to have in the wallet in case you get some problem out of the house.
That's an excellent point. That's a very good idea. You can shrink it down and carry in your wallet. So if something happens to you while you're out of the home,
if
it fits on an index card, exactly. My parents recently did that. I was so proud of them. They showed it to me, and I was very pleased to see that. In conclusion, I want to thank you for listening to what I have to say. A question? Social services come in and they evaluate the situation in the home. They're trained social workers. So it really depends on the situation, but they will try. Oh, yes.
Involve them in the care, but eventually, many times if the person's delusional and they're living next to you, they become a health hazard to you in a sense. They forget about the pot on the stove, that kind of thing. So it becomes kind of a neighborhood issue.
Right. And if there's family available, the social workers from Adult Protective Services will try to get them involved. Sometimes they need to go to placement. Sometimes they need to move to Casa de Flores, and it'll be better for them there. Like I said, 80% of the people want to stay at home, but sometimes it's just not possible. It's not safe for themselves or the neighbors, or mostly for themselves. Any other questions? You guys have been a wonderful audience. And in conclusion, I want to reiterate what Hank said about looking after our neighbors. I think this is a small town. A lot of us have been around for a while and know each other. So keeping an eye on things, setting up a buddy system with your neighbors, just knowing who your neighbors are is very important. Thank you. And next, we'll have Julie Gall. She works for the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. Julie used to be a police officer, and she has done many investigations with the Department of Justice. And it's all yours.
Thank you. Good evening. I want to first thank the Morro Bay Police Department and Mr. Roth for inviting us to speak at such an incredible venue. This is an important issue that we all face today in our community. Even in a small community such as San Luis Obispo County, especially Morro Bay being a small city, these are issues that we oftentimes probably don't think happen in our community. They do, it's real, and we need to be ready for them. I am from the Ombudsman Program of San Luis Obispo County. You all probably are saying, what does that word ombudsman mean? Am I right? Ombudsman is a Scandinavian word that means representatives that are appointed to stand up for the rights of citizens that the government might be infringing on their rights or certain entities might be infringing on their rights. I'm appointed to the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, which places me in long-term care facilities for the elderly and dependent adults. In that role, those suspects to prosecution. One of the things that we see and do daily in long-term care facilities is witnessing advanced health care directives. Most of the time, our volunteers do that. It has to be witnessed by an ombudsman. It's one of our tasks. We do community education. So if the community, such as this, needs to be educated about what the Ombudsman Program does and what we offer, here we are, speaking to the city of Morro Bay. We do information and referrals from our program. Our director, Karen Stenson, has made our program one of the model programs for the entire state for the Ombudsman Programs throughout the state of California. She's done this for many years and has made our program very polished and very proactive and reactive to the needs of our elders and our communities. Speaking of communities being independent of one another as skilled nursing facilities and residential care facilities for the elderly. In Morro Bay, you have Bayside, which is a skilled nursing facility. You also have Casa de Flores, which Meredith so kindly mentioned earlier. That's an RCFE. Bayside is a skilled nursing facility because of the acuity of care. Bayside can do more medical care. Casa de Flores does more of the independent, the individual is still independent enough to not have that type of acuity need. You also have another RCFE in Morro Bay that specializes in citizens that have Alzheimer's or dementia. So in a nutshell, that's what my program does, and we are always available for contact if you have any questions. One of the things that I wanted to share with you and share with the city of Morro Bay is happened to me about 2 weeks ago, and it came from the mouth of a resident at a residential care facility for the elderly. She said to me, "My child, we come into this world once a woman. And we leave this world twice a child." And I kind of looked at her with amazement and not quite sure understanding what she was referring to, because I certainly didn't sit across from her thinking that she was a child. And she could see that I had question in my eyes, and she answered, "I right now am in your hands. You, my child, were once in your parents' hands, and now I am in yours. Because I have dementia," and she was well enough to understand when a child is a victim of a crime. Our society needs to go crazy when there's an elder victim of a crime. We're not quite there, but we're getting there with programs such as this. Like I said, I applaud Morro Bay Police Department for putting on such a presentation. It's rare. I've not seen that before in this community. Some of the types of abuses that I am charged to investigate mirror those types of abuses that Hank was speaking of and that Meredith was speaking of, and two, in domestic settings, when you're still living in your private home, such as homicides can occur in a residential care facility or a skilled nursing facility. Physical abuse. For an example, this woman right here, beaten. Sexual assault. Happens in homes, private homes. It can also happen in a residential care facility for the elderly or a skilled nursing facility. Neglect. Picture this woman over here. Does she look like she's living a happy, quality life? I don't think so. I'm not comfortable when I see that look. Something's wrong behind the face and behind that expression. Restraints, what do I mean by that? Most of us think ropes. Most of us think maybe chains, bungee cords. What about chemical restraints, over-drugging someone? Because you're understaffed and you just really can't get to that resident because that resident's beginning to wander. There goes that dementia, one of those dementia behaviors. And you're not quite staffed enough and you're not quite trained enough to deal with that individual. So let's just give them a lot of psychotropic drugs to keep them in bed, sound asleep. So those are some things that I look at. We look at financial exploitation. Mr. Roth referred to many of the scams that are present in our community. We also see this explosion in San Luis Obispo County because our elders who have retired here are very affluent. They can retire here. They can live here. This is where the money is. This is where the residents are that are elder, independent adults that have the money. So swindled. Let's take their money. We know where we can find them in San Luis Obispo County. Now let's just figure out a way we can do it. Financial exploitation. Taking the property, the money, the hard-earned money from our elders in many devious types of ways. And I will expand on that further in just a moment. Isolation. You can become terribly isolated in a long-term care facility. Again, staffing. Again, do you have family that comes to visit you? That's where my program and our volunteers come in so handy, is that sometimes our volunteers are the only people that resident will be visited by for months. An ombudsman reaches out their hand and they touch a heart. And it's terribly important that we as a society understand that that is important, to reach out to our elders that have been placed in a home. Verbal and psychological abuse. A resident doesn't want to take a shower. They have the right to say they don't want to take a shower that day. That's a resident's rights issue. The caregiver bullies them, forces them to take a shower. That's not okay. And that becomes my problem. Intimidation, intimidating a resident to do something that you feel that they should be doing differently. So those are some of the types of things that I investigate and issues that I investigate that also can be seen in domestic settings. Now, I'm not trying to say that long-term care facilities are bad places, because increasingly we're seeing them become decent places to live and actually good places to live. It's not the ombudsman program's goal to see these facilities shut down. We want to work with them because as baby boomers come into these facilities, we're going to need the facilities and we're going to need these folks that work so hard day in and day out with their heart in the right place. We're going to need them and their experience and their training for when our baby boomers are just going to inundate these facilities. Let's get them these places right now. Let's get these facilities up to regulations. And they most of the time want to do that. I've never met a licensee that just says, you know, Julie, I opened this facility. I spent thousands of dollars opening it because I don't like the elderly. I've never heard one say that. But because human beings are complex and stress gets to us when we're overworked, we're perhaps undertrained and understaffed, it causes stress and we do things sometimes we typically wouldn't do. We lose our tempers. We get agitated. And therein lies one of the next types of abuse that I investigate. I refer to it or define it as rough handling or poor techniques. And I say that because a lot of times these issues get reported to my office as, I think resident A has been beaten. She's got tears all over her arms and she's got, you know, bruises all over her legs. And that's not to say that somebody's kicked her. That's not to say that somebody's punched her. That's how it used to be, elder abuse. Now it's a little bit more gray. this goes to rough handling because, let's say, for example, the caregiver is in charge of six residents, and this resident in question that I'm looking into a complaint for needed to have a two-person, what's called a Hoyer lift. That means that that person cannot get out of their bed and to the shower without a machine called a Hoyer lift. And the doctor has ordered that it has to be a two-person Hoyer lift. Okay? Well, you know, investigator, I just couldn't find the Hoyer lift. I think somebody else was using it down the hallway. I went and got another aide, CNA, or a nurse, and we got him moved. We just didn't use the Hoyer lift. Okay, well, that caused the skin tear. That decision caused him to have tearing on his skin because, as we all know, as we get older, our skin starts to have integrity issues. You bruise easily. You just the touch of a finger on some of our elder skin makes them bruise and makes their skin tear. So with that, we see bruising and skin redness, discomfort, and other traumatic pain that is not perhaps visible. But can you imagine how that resident felt? Not only did that hurt, but he's being rushed through his shower because he just doesn't mean that much. He's just another patient. He's just another resident. I can guarantee you that if that happened to a child and had those types of marks, our society would be outraged. And our society needs to be outraged on these type of issues as well. Verbal and psychological abuse. What is that? That's demeaning, abusive, vulgar language, speaking to a resident or speaking about a resident in front of them. Thinking that they don't understand because they have dementia. Well, I can tell you, 30% of the folks that I have interviewed that have dementia or Alzheimer's, 30% of it, 30% of the time, they know what they're talking about. And so I listen. I don't just disregard their voice. I listen, and we all need to listen a little bit more carefully. Intimidation to force a resident to do something. Like I said with the shower earlier, like I said, perhaps a resident asks, you know, hey, I puts the call bell on. Call bell gets answered 20 minutes later. Is that acceptable? No. That's understaffing. I'm sorry, you're going to have to wait, Mr. Jones. I know that you have to use the bathroom, but you're just going to have to wait. I can't get to you right now. I've got 20 other people lined up. So either wait or go in your pants. What type of treatment is that? That should be absolutely not tolerated by any administrator of a facility, by any licensee of an RCFE, and by our community. So oftentimes with verbal and psychological abuse, our elders become withdrawn, very withdrawn. And very secretive. Why? Because they're embarrassed. They're humiliated. If they share this with their son or daughter or guardian, what is that going to paint a picture of? That they're vulnerable? Okay, well then, what is that going to do with that information? I'm in an RCFE right now, but now my folks, my parents are seeing, I mean my kids, excuse me, not child, they're seeing that I'm becoming more vulnerable. So now am I going to have to go to a skilled nursing facility with more care? For some reason, our population is terrified of the word skilled nursing facility. It is a picture of the convalescent home. That's the same type of feeling. It carries a stigma. But I can tell you that these facilities are getting better. And with our program monitoring them and knowing that we work closely with community care licensing, we work closely with Department of Health Services, which is in charge of the skilled nursing facilities. And currently, our office is working very closely with the Bureau of Medi-Cal Fraud and Elder Abuse. It's a branch of the Department of Justice. The elder becomes isolated from others, including their other family members and friends. because they've been verbally and psychologically abused, just like domestic violence on the streets and in private settings. The elder becomes confused or extremely forgetful. These are all things that we should not be allowing to happen to our elders or to anybody of whatever age. Physical and sexual abuse, and I know this is a dark and very, very depressing type of abuse, because it I can see you all moving in your chairs when I even just introduce it. It makes me move in my chair as well if I had one to sit in long enough. These types of abuses, similar to this picture, beaten, hitting, slapping, dragging, what do I mean by that? Resident falls down on the ground, is refusing to get back up, is upset, exhibiting dementia behaviors. Again, I'll remind you that they oftentimes look like childlike behaviors, just like little Timmy throws a temper tantrum. Sometimes that's the only way that the elder feels like they can communicate, that they don't want to do something. So the caregiver decides to drag the resident on the carpet or on the hardwood floor. A lot of these facilities do have hardwood flooring. And there we go with the skin tears and the abrasions and the carpet burns. And what, if you will, when you get a burn from falling on a basketball court with your skin, it doesn't feel very good physically, doesn't feel very good emotionally either. Kicking, pushing, biting, hair pulling, using extremely hot or extremely cold water to bathe the residents in. It's a form of punishment. Drug diversion, what's that? What is drug diversion? Drug diversion is when a caregiver, sometimes a family member, takes medication belonging to the resident. Oftentimes in skilled nursing facilities, and especially with hospice patients and residents that are on hospice care coming to the end of their life, they have what's called a duralgesic patch on their body somewhere to give them pain relief. These are our elders at the very last stage of their lives. They're on hospice care. And a nurse's aide sneaks into the room at night doing her rounds or his rounds, flips the very frail 98-year-old woman over on her side, lifts her gown and pulls the duralgesic patch off, takes it out, goes into an area of privacy, cuts the duralgesic patch with scissors, and the inside of the duralgesic patch looks like Kool-Aid, drops it into her mouth. She has a sublingual high now from a very, very strong narcotic, and she goes back to work. Our resident is in excruciating pain, and that's how she's living the last couple days of her life. That person is in prison. But that type of concern, even though San Luis Obispo is a relatively low crime rate, we're going to see more and more of that, because the opportunity presented itself there, and this caregiver who was working in this facility obviously hadn't been cleared through a background check to show that she has substance abuse issues like Meredith just mentioned. We got to clear them. We've got to be more aggressive with the background checks. That same facility had surveillance footage of another person taking the Sharpie container off of a wall. Couldn't get into it, so she just tipped it over and let the remaining liquid fall into her mouth with at least 50 different needles in the box. Talk about infection control outside of it being a drug problem, and now that person goes back to her shift and is caring for our elderly. I don't think so. Financial abuse. I just made mention to that, financial exploitation. We're seeing that explode in San Luis Obispo County, sadly. This is an issue that all of us can become a victim to. This is an issue that most of our elder independent adults feel very embarrassed when it happens to them. So oftentimes they don't do anything about it, because oftentimes it's their own children Oftentimes, it's their own caregiver. Caregiver taking care of a resident decides to get a little more intimate with this resident. A little trickery there. Caregiver then says, I know you want to go back home and you still have that really nice house. And I'd love to take you back there. Because doesn't everyone want to go home? I think they do. So they go back to this person's home and set up shop. Soon she becomes this individual's fiance. Soon she becomes this individual's power of attorney of finances. Soon she becomes named on every piece of property he owns. Soon she's got all of his money. And he's in a skilled nursing facility, quickly fading. Now, that case is going to be brought to fruition quite soon. It's probably something you will see on the news. I can't go into the specific details or names to this case, obviously for confidentiality reasons. But it's going to be an explosive case, and we are aggressively going after these people. Some of the things that you all should look for with a banking issues are large transfers between accounts. So this money is just flip-flopping back and forth, and it's just not explainable. It's not plausible why this money is being flip-flopped back and forth. Unusual banking activities. My mom's never used an ATM. My mom's 60 years old. She's never used an ATM and never has had any interest in it. She thinks that there's just some type of voodoo involved with it and not sure that she's comfortable with it. So she goes and does her banking inside. She's probably smart. Changes in spending, often accompanied by a new best friend. So your loved one that's living in a residential care facility makes friends with a caregiver, and now that caregiver is your loved one's new best friend and going out to dinners and leaving the facility and going on shopping sprees. Well, that, as a power of attorney of finance or a child that is involved in their parents' life still, should be suspicious. Who is this new best friend? Let's check him out. Let's actually report it to the Ombudsman Program and let Julie check it out. Okay? Implausible explanations given about an elder's finances by a caregiver or relative. So if someone came up to me and said that they had property in Arizona that was beachfront, they wanted to sell it to me because I am who I am, wouldn't believe them, and I wouldn't believe them with this either. So you report it to my program, and we'll make sure that we thoroughly look into the allegation and make sure that they provide us with a plausible explanation before we go any further. Unpaid bills, discontinued services. Why? Has our elder ever not paid their bills? Have they ever had their services turned off? Most children, most guardians of our elder adults would say, no, that's a departure from his or her personality. So let's look into that. Eviction notices. That's in the domestic setting as well. But we also get eviction notices for residents of skilled nursing facilities and RCFEs because their child, who's supposed to be paying the share of cost, is taking the money. Their child, who is supposed to be depositing the Medicare or Medi-Cal, is taking that money, putting it in the bank and then taking it. So the share of cost is not being paid by the resident. Therefore, the resident faces eviction. Facility has to get paid. So we get called in on those as well. What about services that have been billed to the senior but never have been provided? So you're being billed for a service. Had one example of a resident who went and had lab work done. And this particular lab charged them a prolific amount of money for what they could have done one blood draw and mix it all up and get the same result. But put down that they had to do 7 different lab tests to get the ultimate result that you could have gotten with one. Hundreds of dollars. Hundreds of dollars. Forged signatures on banking statements. Got to look out for that. because oftentimes our seniors and me, right now I'm flailing with my paperwork here, have shaky hands. Our signatures don't look the way they used to when you're 19. I know mine doesn't. So it's easy to forge it because it's just not perfect and it's not that erratic as some of us that, you know, are still in our youth and we just kind of, you know, whip our signature out with no problem. The residents and our elders usually have to focus a little bit more when they're signing their signature. Resident being tricked into appointing a suspect as the power of attorney of finances. It's all about trickery. If your gut, like Mr. Roth said, if your gut is telling you something's wrong, there probably is something wrong. And you need to follow your instinct. So also when we have residents that are in long-term care facilities, oftentimes we are dealing with dementia, we are dealing with Alzheimer's, and oftentimes they do not have the capacity, mental capacity or legal capacity to sign anything that's a legal document. So you question that. If you know that there's a resident or you know that there's a senior that does not have that capacity and you know that they're being asked to sign legal documents, you stop it and you report it to the Ombudsman Program, local law enforcement, and the Bureau of Medical Fraud and Elder Abuse. Neglect, and Meredith kind of touched on self-neglect. I'm going to touch on neglect because I, again, am from the point of view from a long-term care facility, and they shouldn't be self-neglecting if they're getting proper care. But can they be neglected? Yes. This woman right over here, neglect. Again, look at that face. It haunts me. Failing to provide essential personal items. Failing to provide food. Failing to provide liquid. Clothing. And medical services. All of this can lead to dehydration. We all know that dehydration causes what? Strokes. We don't need to set our elders up for having a stroke earlier than they possibly might have one. Poor hygiene. I went to a facility and recognized that this resident was so poorly groomed. He hadn't been shaven. His nails hadn't been cut. He was embarrassed of the growth on the hair on his face. Apologized to me profusely for not being in clean clothes. That's neglect. Because that goes to his dignity, and that is a resident's right issue. Excessive weight loss. If you're not feeding somebody that, for instance, and I'm going to age Karen Stenson in place here, my boss hates chicken. If she ever is, in a skilled nursing facility or a residential care facility for the elderly, you feed her chicken, she's not going to eat it. She's going to have excessive weight loss. Decubitus ulcers. Those are bed sores. What causes that is the facility not recognizing that, ooh, this resident is pretty much bedbound, whether it be from a problematic disease or because they're just choosing to stay in bed or because they're just immobile and non-ambulatory. You need to get these mattresses that force the movement, so it takes the pressure off of certain parts of the body, and you need to make sure that this person's not getting decubitus ulcers, bed sores. And if they are, you need to make sure that you're treating them so they don't go up in stages. That's neglect. If you're not aware of that as a caregiver and as a facility, you are neglecting that resident. Incontinence of bowel and bladder. If we're not being taken care of physically and emotionally, our bodies just decide to give up. And that is no way for a senior in San Luis Obispo County or in any county to end the last stages of their lives. So how do we improve this care? Well, the Ombudsman Program of San Luis Obispo County is proactive and we're reactive and we're responsive and we need more volunteers. We have 95 facilities that are residential care facilities for the elderly assigned to us. It's a daunting task for me because a lot of those allegations that are of abuse come solely to me. And so if I have good volunteers that we can send out to all of these facilities and have that coverage, most importantly, it makes the residents' life much easier because they get those social visits. that advocacy that they so need, that hand that they just want to feel the warmth of, you know, that person looking straight into their eyes and listening to them, caring about their care. Because I think, for the most part, every resident, every elder I have worked with so far in my new role here has appreciated my visit, and I've made it very clear that I appreciate them. And sometimes that, as a human being, that's all we need to hear to get us through another day. Because those days get long when you don't have visitors and you don't have family. So it's our goal. I know it's local law enforcement's goal and the district attorney of San Francisco County's goal to improve the coordination between all the various local law enforcement, regulatory, and protective services, advocacy programs such as mine, involved in the care of our elders. We are going to have to ask you as a society, you as the city of Morro Bay, to step up and help us. We need to make sure that conditions are improved for workers through adequate staffing, enhanced communication between direct care and administrative staff, and understanding the difficult lives of many of these caregivers. They're making minimum wage. They're overworked. Oftentimes, we're seeing that they're not getting a day off. Okay, well, we as a society need to step up and say that's not right, and we know that there is a correlation between abuse, neglect, and understaffing. Training that focuses on interpersonal caregiving skills. Went to a facility the other day. They've provided 2 hours of dementia training on a video. Not only is that a licensing violation and that will be dealt with by licensing, but to the core and moral principle of that, it's unacceptable. Because their entire resident numbers are all dementia and Alzheimer's residents. They have a dementia waiver, so they can accept dementia residents. Therefore, they should, and they are charged with, having better training. More aggressive background checks. Meredith kind of touched base with that. I am in 100% agreement with Meredith. We need to be more aggressive about these background checks, including the history of substance abuse, domestic violence. The caregiver's feelings about caring for the elderly, is this just because this is the only job you could find, so you took it? Work ethics and their ability to manage stress and anger. It's very important because oftentimes our residents that have dementia and Alzheimer's become agitated, and they need to understand that's part of those diseases and that it's not something personal towards the caregiver. It's not something that the resident's trying to agitate the caregiver with. It's just part of the process. And so this, with being a neighborhood watch presentation, it occurred to me that you might say, well, how are long-term care facilities my neighbor? I don't see them. I don't see my neighbors. I see my neighbors every day. When we have folks, residents that are living in long-term care facilities, none of us see them. So we don't really think that they're part of our neighborhood because they're not visible. What you can't see might not be there. I'm here to tell you that it is there, these types of abuses. And I'm here to tell you that there's residents sitting right now in facilities, whether this facility be good, bad, or indifferent, that want visitors, that need eyes and ears to call the ombudsman program and say, hey, met with my neighbor today. She or he lived in a long-term care facility. She or he said something as basic as the food stinks. They serve it cold. Is that an abuse allegation? No, but that's a complaint. And our volunteers that are so diligent in their work would go and touch base with that resident. And oftentimes, with those types of issues, they uncover other allegations that now calls for my attention. So in closing, I just want to impart to you that long-term care facilities and the residents that live within them are indeed your neighbors. And we as a society need to hold them in our hands and regard them and treat them with respect. So I thank the Morro Bay Police Department and the city of Morro Bay. I hope you have a great evening.
Good job, Julie. Good job, Meredith. Thank you guys so much for coming and helping us out. Folks, it's been a good evening. I really thank you all for tuning in. I thank you folks in the audience for coming in. And look forward to next month. We'll be discussing next month. September is National Preparedness Month, and we will be doing presentations on emergency preparedness. So thank you again. Thank you, AGP, for filming this production, and good night.